water, and some of them, and some of people, as we know, for stealing power in the country. And somewhere along the line, some worker, the Barbados Worker Authority, some worker possibly from the power company, was involved in this. Now, of course, a private citizen had to have a connection that resulted in the installation of those things. But that private citizen doesn't understand that they're engaging in corruption. When we do favors for people, we are engaging in corruption, but we don't seem to understand that because we believe it is harmless. And one of the questions I keep asking people is that, why should only your friends or a person who pays you a small sum of money or does some favor for you elsewhere benefit from this when it's supposed to be a public service? So there are public service that routinely that public officials are supposed to be, engaged in. But unfortunately, some of the people who easily benefit from those are those who are prepared to pay a bribe, or perhaps they are people who are connected in one form or the other to the public servant. Why is it that persons get jobs not on merit but on knowing individuals? All of these things constitute corruption, so that we tend to believe that corruption only hinges on or revolves around the giving us something which is financial or monetary. But there are other ways in which corruption, in fact, does take place. And so I hope that we can broaden the conversation and people can actually share the experiences. The gentleman a while ago spoke about how he abhors the bribe, the paying of money around election time. We hear about operatives walking about constituencies with bags of money. I'm not sure to what extent that is in fact a fact, if you understand what I'm saying to you. But I can say that over the years, in the last 20 years or so, my students have routinely told me that they have in fact been recipients of money by operatives of political parties and candidates. So I am aware. Are they going to willingly say that in public? Of course not. They're not going to say so. But they come to me and they tell me, because we discuss those issues in the classroom, they say to me that these are their experiences. So yes, those things, as Dr. Devanish indicates, does breed a level of distrust on the part of the community, even when we ourselves are benefiting from participating in the corruption. But you ask a question which I think is also very pertinent, and the question is why is it at this point in time there is so much interest in the issue of corruption? And one of the things we must understand is that we are not living in the 1920s. We are not living in the 1960s. We're in the 21st century, where we have easy access to the internet, where we see live before our eyes politicians all across the world being indicted on charges of corruption. So obviously people are becoming more aware. And social media, where we young people are at, I think is very attuned to bringing out that kind of information. And that is why we see so many people, partly, it's not the only reason, because we cannot look at it in a one-dimensional way, but certainly that is one of the reasons why we see so many people being more and more attuned to the very negative impact of corruption on our societies.
All right, thank you, Dr. Giles. We'll go straight to the phone lines because we have a number of calls here. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
I'm sorry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
Yeah.
I appreciate everything that lady just said.
Cynthia Bar-Giles.
Yeah. She is good. But there's one thing that I got to mention. I heard politicians say that politics is a game. And a game that you want to win. Now, I hear talking about buying and corruption and all kinds of things. Let me ask the question, ask the lady this question now. If a party promised you that if I win the election, in 24 hours you can get such a thing, we call that.
You want me to answer the question?
Yeah, before you go on, yeah, you can answer the question.
Oh, you want to answer the question. If a politician says to the individual...
Not a politician, the party of you, if I win by in 24 hours,
they would usually say within 100 days
or whatever. What you call it? In other words, I don't think that if you want to buy votes by going around giving you $10 bills, could be a promise. a good promise, a good slogan will win the election, and that's what's happening in Barbados all the time. If you could rig up a good promise that could work or look like it could work, you win elections every time in Barbados. It has nothing at all to do with a fellow coming on your $10 bill. It's a good promise, good slogan, win elections. All this talk about selling the Hilton and this kind of thing, that all win elections. I think the average man in Barbados is interested in if the Hilton sell.
You want me to answer that question?
Yes, mistress.
Okay. I respect your opinion, right? And you're entitled to your opinion. But we must also look look at the facts. And any person who is studying elections will tell you that people are motivated by a variety of factors. I would agree that a good slogan is important for an election. It's part of the election gimmick. It will rally people, it will mobilize people, etc. But people vote for a whole host of reasons. People vote for economic reasons. People vote for political reasons. People vote because their family have always voted in a particular way, and therefore there is family voting taking place. So it is not true to say that the sole and only reason why people vote in an election and which will win a political party in an election is, in fact, the slogan of the political party. And I'm not going to call names, but I remember a particular election in 2008 when it took place. The party that lost the election, well, I already called names, but the party that lost the election had a very good slogan. But the party lost the election. The party lost the election not because the opposition Democratic Labour Party had a very good slogan.
Can they come in there?
Of course, anytime.
In 2008, mm-hmm. the government that win, the party that win, promised that if you put me in power, I can give you a house that you've been living in for 20 years. That win the election. What could be that?
Hold on a second. That appealed to a particular segment of the population. That
could
have won the... That appealed to a particular segment of the electorate. There are other people that the political party had to reach out to. And therefore, there are other things which, in fact, they promised. Now, when you talk about giving people housing, because housing is always a critical issue in election. It is part of the socio-economic things, platforms of political parties that some of us look out for. And clearly, it did not go to a particular individual and say, well, I'll give you a house. It said to a particular social class that if we win the election, a particular social class, that if you win the election, we will provide you with housing. That is what we call patron clientelism. Almost every political party engages in that. I do not think that people condemn that particular practice. What people condemn is the fact that, unfortunately, too often, politicians do go around and promise individuals certain things, whether it be some finances or it be some other form of a gift. It be galvanized for your house. It be some concrete blocks. It be a scholarship or what have you. And these are some of the things that we are more concerned about, and not necessarily on the social class promises that political parties make in election.
Can you come back there now?
Yeah, you have very quickly.
They had 11 constituencies in St. Michael, 4 in Christchurch, 3 in St. James, and the Carrier, actually all of them, there's a part of the constituencies that people living in government houses in the city, Christchurch and St. James. That's who win the election.
But I'm saying to you that may have been a contributing factor. But I'm also saying to you that after 13 years in government, people had issues with the Barbados Labour Party, just as they have issues today with the Democratic Labour Party. And
but
those issues went, beyond. They went beyond housing, and they went beyond whether or not a party had a good slogan or a bad slogan.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. We need to take a commercial break and just remind Barbadians that this program today on corruption, fact or fiction in Barbados, is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries, Inc.
For building surprise, big or small, at Williams Metals we have it all. Angles, flats, cement and doors, lumber, windows and much, much more.
Get all your lumber needs from us. We have number one treated pine, all different types of plywood, V-joint, siding board and concrete board. In addition, we have grade 3 2x4s and form play for boxing.
Big or small, at Williams Metals we have it all. At Williams Metals we have it all.
visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back. We go to another call.
Yeah, Spanka?
Yes, it is.
Let me turn this radio down.
Please.
Yeah.
Yes, go right ahead with your question.
Yeah, this question is for the lady.
For Cynthia Bargiles, that's her name, please.
Cynthia Bargiles, yes. She's a lady, ain't she? I am. Miss Bargiles, can a person spend the money before being corrupt, and at the same time, people at the bottom where that money is being squandered can be corrupt? If you understand the question?
Not really.
I'm asking if a person that is squandering money, condomania, and not, can that person be corrupt?
Yes.
But let's assume that they're squandering the money before being corrupt. Because sometimes you spend money in a way that is not the right way to spend it, but you're not corrupt either.
That's inefficiencies.
Right. But then there are people at the bottom who would benefit from me squandering money, for example. Then indeed I'm not aware of what's happening at the bottom and that people are benefiting from squandermania. Can anybody there be charged?
Not the people at the bottom, no.
Oh. But if
those who are squandering the money must be held accountable for squandering the money.
Right.
Because they're misusing public funds.
Correct. That's basically what you want to know. And the other question is this. If I'm a minister and I offer you a contract and then I say to you, what is in it for me? Is that corruption?
But of course it is corruption. That's the very definition of corruption.
Yeah.
Because they're seeking to get a bribe from you.
Yeah, then there's my two questions, basically. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you very much. We stay on the four lines. Good afternoon. You're on Brass Tack Sunday.
Yes, good afternoon, Megan.
You're on the air. You're on the air. Go right ahead with your question.
Yes, good afternoon to you and your guest.
Hi, good afternoon.
I want to ask Ms. Bargiles a question. I wonder if her country, the country that she came from, if it's free from corruption, and how many countries in the world free from corruption? I have something to answer to.
I do not know why you're asking me if the country I come from has corruption. And the country I come from is St. Lucia. And the country I come from, or St. Lucia, is a very corrupt country. If you go and you download the Transparency International Corruption Perception Index, you will see where St. Lucia falls on that perception index, and it falls well below Barbados. I have said in all my works, in all my writings, that every single Caribbean country is corrupt and every country in the world is corrupt. Let me just settle the matter for you once and for all before you feel that I am targeting Barbados and not looking at other countries. I am in Barbados and therefore I speak to the Barbadian situation. However, if you look at Transparency International Perception Index, in ranking of the countries, two countries were ranked at the top of the perception index is, in fact, I believe Denmark and was it New Zealand, and they received received 88 out of a possible 100. In other words, no country was given 100, and which is the most that you can in fact obtain. So what it means is that even though countries are doing well in terms of the perception of index, in terms of the corruption perception index, even where countries are doing well in terms of how citizens themselves view corruption, and there sometimes is a mismatch between how citizens view corruption and how Transparency International ranks countries on that corruption perception index, there are still countries. What Transparency International is saying to us is that there is still much more that can be done, because not a single country has received 100%, which means corruption takes place. Corruption is not something that you can get rid of. There will always be some form of corruption. And in developing countries like ours, like Barbados, like St. Lucia, like Trinidad and Tobago, like Jamaica, like other developing countries in Africa where it is far worse than the Caribbean, The reality is that sometimes it is recognized that paying a little money, and I'm not condoning it, but it is realized that paying a little money sometimes does grease the wheel and allow things to run a little more efficiently than it otherwise would. So corruption, some people have argued, can be beneficial. But we're talking about small level of corruption. When we talk about the grand corruption that takes place as distinct to the petty corruption, that is what we need to be concerned about. So to just wrap it up, I'm from the country of St. Lucia, where we have significant elements of corruption to the point where the, I think it is the, what you call it, the regional court in the OECS actually condemned the government of St. Lucia a few years ago for conducting and behaving in a very corrupt manner when it came to the allocation of certain incentives to certain politicians. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I want to make a comment, please, possible?
We move on to another caller. Go right ahead. This is Mark, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Go right ahead, Mark.
Let me say good morning to your guests, and I'm going to be very upfront. It seems as if their corruption centers around the politician, from what I'm hearing. My question is, are there people that are not politicians are corrupt or that can corrupt anybody? Corrupt people can corrupt others. So if we just justify our belief this morning that politicians are the only corrupt people, then obviously those persons who are truly corrupt are going on challenge. That is to say that the fellows who are involved in drugs at the level are the ones who are captured, but the fellows at the top goes free. So let's get it straight. Corruption does not point in any one direction. You know that. Corruption could point in several directions.
Mark, just let me, let me into.
May I thank her?
All right, you go right ahead.
Mark, I think you are very clear. Good morning. Good afternoon. This afternoon, yeah. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon.
I think you are very clear. I'm okay. I'm doing all right. I think we are very clear from the beginning that one of the unfortunates of doing work on corruption is that there is a tendency to focus on government. And once you focus on government, you're going to get two actors. You're going to get the bureaucrats and you're going to get the politicians. But we were very clear, I think, throughout the morning to say that you have corruption in the private sector and that when there is government corruption, particularly when it comes to issues of the procurement system, that you cannot have corruption in the absence of some other corrupt person, whether the person is the corruptee or the corruptor in the private sector. We also were very clear this morning, I'm quite sure about it, that we indicated that private citizens themselves, I'm not just talking about businessmen, etc., but private citizens themselves can also behave corruptly. So if you are left with the distinct impression that we are given the impression that it's only politicians that are corrupt, that is not what we put out there at all. And so I want to correct that misconception that is only politicians are corrupt. But we must focus on corrupt, on public corruption because of the way in which public monies are sometimes used, of the way in which sometimes the fact that we do not engage in certain things lead to negative consequences for the entire society. And when that is concerned, focus on politicians.
All right, Mark, before you say anything, I have Dr. Dwayne Davenish here, and one of the things that we made quite clear, we looked at the study that was done in 2015, and one of the interesting things about this study is that the Barbadians at the time were saying 51% of those acts thought that the police force and then lawyers. Police, lawyers, and then politicians. And close behind them were people who actually worked in government in the different ministries, the bureaucrats. So, and that was said from up front. So,
yes. I want to defend my case then. So since that is the case, Dwayne Devnish, the survey that Dwayne has given out is not really discussed this morning, because if Dwayne gives the categories where corruption exists, whether the judiciary, whether it's the politician, whether it is the police, somewhere along the line, I have not heard this morning in your discussion, I'd like to be fair, that we have found corruption in the judiciary.
It's not judiciary, it said court system.
Court system.
Court system, I emphasize that.
So what I'm concerned about, panel and a moderator. The fact remains that we have belief in ourselves, and the question this morning to prove it, if there is corruption anywhere, to prove it. But we are channeling our energies this morning, and I'm very fair. I'm one of the people who spoke about corruption across the board in Barbados. I'm not defending it at this moment. I am of the opinion that if we do not understand where this, it's like a birth or something. It grows and then it spreads, and then it gets to the point where you control it, where you cannot control it. And I'm very concerned this morning, panel, that somewhere along the line that you have given me definitions, have given me theories of corruption. But somewhere along the line, everybody called it, the last caller talked about the government house and who get houses and who won't get houses. That is not what it's all about.
All right, Mark, let Dr. Devnish respond to you first before we go on. Dr. Devnish?
Yeah. Hi, Mark. Thanks for the contribution. I believe the narrative was driven heavily by the, as you know, the callers in terms of looking at corruption with respect to the government. But, I mean, that doesn't negate the fact, of course, that corruption exists in all spheres. Perhaps you actually started the ball running in terms of corruption, looking at various aspects. Let's look at the police. What do you have to say there in terms of that was the highest category? You have anything to say regarding the police then? Let's have the narrative shifted a little bit.
I'm going to make an honest comment. Can I go ahead?
Yes,
go ahead.
The position is that the police comes from the society of which breeds the development of that police. I'm of the opinion that if we corner the police as being corrupt, then obviously at some point of his corruption, there was an intention involvement. And that's what I'm saying. Yes, I agree with you that you have found, but what about some of the civil servants? We have had cases before the courts in Barbados where civil servants has misappropriated government funds. Where civil servants...
Mark, you really are listening, you know. Honestly, you are not listening, Mark. Honestly. We clarified that, okay? The five top categories in terms of how Barbadians perceive perception. Number one, they said it was the police. Number two, they said it was lawyers. Number three, they thought it was politicians. Number four, they thought it was the people who work in the different ministries and other government departments. And number five was the court system.
I stand by my word, right? I stand by the answer that your preamble this morning. Let's prove it. Now, obviously, you've got to a rumor, you've got to assess that there is corruption across the board. Gentlemen, I am of the opinion that your surveyor could be right. But what I'm dealing with this morning, and I want to stay to my grounds this morning, that since your preamble this morning is to prove it, in all the categories that Mr. Devnish has spoken about, just let's move ourselves away from the corruption within the fourth angle, which is the politician, and look at the businesses that are also corrupt. Look at the other areas of corruption that are established, and that's all I'm saying.
All right, thank you, Mark. We go to... In fact, no, we've tried to get in some of these WhatsApp messages and we have a tremendous amount of these. This person and the person who sent this in, I cannot call the names of that you have here. But this person is saying that the amount of corruption that is taking place, he mentions about some of the actions of the police in terms of people who would have lost their lives, and there are cases that are pending, and we're hearing nothing about that. People who are missing, where the police would have been involved, and yet we're hearing nothing. The fact that there's certain problems with land acquisitions and whatnot that's shrouded in secrecy, and that is problematic. And again, that is corruption. So this person is saying that there's corruption at all levels in Barbados, and it really needs to be looked at. And this other person here is saying, until you convince the clerical officer, either in the public or private sector, to stop taking cash under the desk for favors, there will always be corruption. It's no use looking at legislation in Jamaica or Trinidad and Tobago. Corruption is still rife in those countries. So that's another argument there. Dr. Devnish.
Yes.
Why do you think, and we're going to go to the latest shortly, so I guess we can just start this discussion here. But doesn't it strike you as odd? I don't know how it strikes you, but it certainly strikes me as curious as to why the police, lawyers, and the court system are perceived to be very corrupt.
Well, Sanka, when you look at all three, what do they have in common? They're
they're
organs of the criminal justice system in Barbados. And if you, again, going back to the media reports over the last few months, we've seen what people might consider injustices or the poor distribution of justice in various cases, and I don't want to call any names, but clearly this is no surprise. This is no surprise. We've seen reports in terms of police, allegations of collusion. If you see, I have an article in the Sunday Sun today looking at garrison communities, and Ms. Barajas know about this too well, and the whole idea of garrison communities where there's a perception that there are elements of gang leaders colluding with police officers and lawyers and, you know, politicians. Is a network. And it's no surprise that these things kind of reinforce that status quo. I'll let Cynthia come in here.
Hi, yes. So many things, Sanka. But I want to go back to the case being put forward by Mark, however. Mm-hmm. And I just want to reiterate that throughout the morning, perhaps we have focused, the emphasis has been on political corruption. But we have identified bureaucratic corruption, and we have identified private sector corruption. We have spoken about corruption in the judiciary, and we consider judiciary, because we're not talking about judges. We're talking about the entire system. We have spoken about corruption in the legal system. We have spoken about election-based corruption, all forms of corruption. So sometimes, you know, there is an issue of self-interest that I suppose we have to understand. So I want to leave that there. There are so many issues that you raised in terms of the WhatsApp messages that you're getting that my mind is reeling right now. So you probably would have to remind me about some of the issues. But one of the things I want to say is that when we look at the police is particularly vulnerable to corruption. Because almost any day, a police officer can be, you know, driving along the streets and see an individual. I'm not talking about Barbados, anywhere in the world, who may be breaking the law and who may be willing to. And they are such, take a little bribe to just turn a blind eye to something. And one of the things we need to speak about, which we have not done, and the person spoke about a clerical officer taking a bribe on the desk. And we have to ask ourselves really and truly, why does this take place? Because we recognize that part and parcel of the whole corruption matrix or issue is the fact that too often people are underpaid for the services which they provide. And I'm not suggesting, however, that the most corrupt people in the world are in fact those who are underpaid, because we do know that there are people who are multimillionaires and billionaires all across the world who have got caught up in corruption scandals, scandals that far outweigh any of the petty corruption that takes place. So I want to let people know that we should not just focus on the petty corruption. Yes, it's indicative of a wider problem, but we also need to focus on the grand corruption that takes place. And the grand corruption is normally associated with politicians and with private sector individuals, business firms, etc., who benefit largely from the corruption that takes place in society. So there are a number of issues that clearly no 2 hours or 3 hours or 4 hours talking about corruption will never cover it, which is why one of the things I've been saying for the morning is that rather than talk about the scandals, rather than focus on what Transparency International says about the Corruption Perception Index, we need to look very closely at all of the pillars of our national integrity system and to locate where there is the potential for corruption to take place and see what we can do about it. Unfortunately, we have not focused on the system in the way that I would have liked to, but I understand because the discussion is driven by the interest of the callers to the program.
But I think when we come back, because we're going to take a break right now for the latest, the 12:30 edition, when we come back, we will certainly be taking a look at that. So please stay with us, Cynthia Barra-Giles, Dr. Dwayne Devenish, and callers, please stay with us. We'll be right back after the latest to look further at this topic, which is brought to you with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful permaclad U-panel and R-panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joints from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices, delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas 425-2000 or Lowlands Christ Church 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brass Tack Sunday. This is Sian Caprice in the chair. Our producer is Mr. Ronald Clark. With me is Dr. Dwayne Devenish. And on the line shortly again will be Cynthia Barr-Giles. They're both senior lecturers at the University of the West Indies. Dr. Dwayne Devenish, he is a management scientist, and he focuses on behavioral science. And Ms. Barr-Giles, she is a political scientist. Now, at the break, we said we look at some other aspects and just move it away from this whole political realm. Here I'm looking at, in terms of corruption, here I'm looking at a WhatsApp message, and it says, "Who guards the guards? We Bajans have seen many examples of integrity, lack of integrity. The police, the doctors, the lawyers, the teachers et al., all of the cases, 100%. Always go in favor of the accused. They are looking after each other. You simply cannot wash something clean by using dirty water." That is that person's perspective. Cynthia Barr-Giles, are you there with us now?
Yes, I am.
Great. At the break, you said let's start looking at a number of other areas. So let's just start doing that and see how far we can go with that, and also bring in some callers and some more WhatsApp messages, as we have so many here right now. In fact, let's let me start the ball rolling with another WhatsApp message. Corruption has existed in the public service for a long time. The level has risen because of the rapid success of the most corrupt employees. I worked in the civil service for 40 years, and I witnessed some of the most corrupt persons reach the highest ranks. So what do you expect their subordinates to do if they want to get ahead quickly? Well, sometimes these messages, boy. I'm smiling because it mentions positions and names, and really casts aspersions. So you have to be very careful as you read it, when you open it. Okay, Dr. Devenish.
Yes, I really want persons, especially looking at the survey, to kind of take a different perspective. You know, oftentimes we get on the defense, you know, and we tend to push the ball to another sector. For example, I remember the police officer told me, what about corruption in the customs and immigration services and so forth? And then we never look at the research and see it as an opportunity, perhaps to relook at our systems, the way that we interact with the public, in terms of our anti-corruption systems and so forth. How can we take these results and benefit the organizations that we serve and the public that we serve? I think we should really look at these results in a more positive light. I always say that research is like a mirror. You know, we can get upset with the mirror and crack the mirror and break the mirror. But then we go to another mirror. So what do? We change the mirror or do we change the man looking into the mirror? And I think the latter is critical here. Sanka?
Ms. Bargiles, you'd like to come in and just, let's take this conversation to another a different angle?
Certainly, Sanka. Thank you for the opportunity. I want to start by saying that, as you may be aware, I recently published a work on the state of the national integrity system, which focuses on the Commonwealth Caribbean, inclusive, therefore, of Barbados. And what I try to do is to not look at scandals per se. What I try to do is to look at processes, look at institutions, look at practices. And the reason for doing so was to look to see to what extent we can, in fact, see what opportunities there may be for corruption to take place. And my basic argument is that we need to create a system that functions well. And only when that system, the entire governance system, functions well, we'll be able to, in fact, provide safeguards against the potential for corruption taking place. Whether or not we talk about the petty corruption or we talk about the grand corruption, the only way, both in the public and the private sector, that we can have any reduction or erosion of corruption, which certainly exists, is if we have our governance systems operating well. And I also argue, and this has principally been the kind of work that I've been involved in over the years, that wherever you have a system, a governance system, which is not marked by checks and balances, or that you have very few checks and balances, where you have too much discretion, where you have too much monopoly power, where you have limited transparency, where you have procedures that are not very transparent and accountable, the more likely, clearly, it is for corruption to take place, whether we talk at the political level or whether we talk about the administrative level or we talk, in fact, about the private sector. So for me, other than focusing on politicians per se, and essentially a lot of the discussion we had this morning was actually focusing on election-related issues. We talk about vote buying, and we tend to associate vote buying with elections. But for me, it is far more, I think, fruitful to look at how the Elections Commission undertakes its work, how the Elections Commission is in fact appointed. Let's look at the electoral process to see what can we do. And somebody made a point this morning about maybe we might need to in the future invite international observers if there are issues and if vote buying continues. No, we need to invite international observers whether or not we believe things are operating 100%. They will reaffirm that it's been done well. They'll reaffirm that we, in fact, are keeping our commitments to the global agreements that we have signed on to. So let's look at all of those practices. Let us look at the judiciary. Let's look at all of the practices, institutions, and procedures as they relate to constitutional and legal institutions in the Caribbean. Let's look at all of the areas that relate to the financial accountability in our communities. And therefore, we need to focus not only at the work of the Treasury Department and the Accountant General, but we need to focus on the Auditor General and, of course, the Public Accounts Committee, as well as the capacity of Parliament to engage in any kind of scrutiny of the work of government in relation to the spending of government money. Let us look also at the media to see to what extent the media finds itself colluding with the public and the private sectors in a way that probably would suggest that there is an element of corruption and a lack of integrity operating there. Let us look at the functioning of Parliament itself. Can we say for a fact that the Westminster model is the best model for the region? Can we, in fact, say without any dispute whatsoever that we do not have some concerns in relation to the fact that we have parliaments which are dominated by a ruling political party? What do we say about the situation in Grenada and the potential for corruption? What do we say about police officers who engage in a very partisan way in the electoral process? I take, for example, an issue in coming out of the last election in St. Vincent, where we witnessed the Commissioner of Police dressed in full party regalia at elections. What does that say about the integrity of the police force? And so what do we say about civil society's capacity to hold government to account. And all of those institutions, that's why I'm saying that the conversation needs to be broader than just focusing on some illustrations of corruption and look at institutions, procedures, etc., that will in fact improve what we are doing. So that, for instance, when you look at Denmark, you need to ask yourself, why is Denmark rated at number one, ranked at number one in the Transparency International Corruption Perception Index? It's because Denmark has Switzerland and Sweden and also Iceland and so forth have put a number of processes and institutions in place that would prevent the occurrence of corruption. So that is some of the conversation I would have liked to have seen.
But the question I would ask you that is that in a small society like ours, is that possible? A small society where you're either some related to or you know somebody who knows somebody close to this other person. How practical is all of these suggestions in a small society?
What are you suggesting? That because we are small societies, we should not put processes and we should not put...
No, I'm not suggesting that at
that
all.
That would limit the occurrence of corruption.
What I'm...
It is a little more difficult for small societies, clearly, because everybody knows everybody else. But that is not to suggest we need to ring-fence ourselves. And I don't like the idea of ring-fencing. And let me explain. When you talk to Caribbean politicians about putting legislation in place that would regulate the flow of money into the political system, when you talk to them about limiting the amount of money that comes in the political system, when you talk to them about disclosing where the money is, the sources of the money, where it is coming from, the first thing they tell you is that we are not going to do that. And the reason why we're not going to do it is because we do not want anybody to be victimized in societies like ours, which are so small, that if people know that you contribute $6,000 to a political party and the party does not win the election, you are likely to abuse. But does that mean, however, that we should not put some minimum procedures in place, some minimum guidelines in place that will help us to reduce the level of victimization and increase the level of accountability of the political actors? I don't think so. So, yes, small size is a problem, but that is not to suggest that we have to give in to small size and say, throw our hands up in the air and say we should do absolutely nothing. And that has been a problem in the Caribbean.
Okay. The question needed to be asked, and it was answered. We go to the phone lines. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Sanka. Good afternoon, Tibano.
Good afternoon.
I think one of the things that we have to really and truly look at is the cultural component that is associated with the perception of corruption and the acts of corruption and that sort of stuff. And one of the saddest commentaries that I feel that I can make on society right now, on Bajan society, I'm talking specifically about Barbados, is the fact that we believe and are believing more and more that in order to get ahead or to be at the top in this country, you have to be corrupt. So therefore, we have this. We hear people all the time speaking about our politicians and saying that, oh, well, if you get into politics and you come out without any money, you're an idiot. You didn't know what you were doing. You didn't get rich? Come on. Or to believe that, well, it doesn't matter which party I vote for, because both of them are corrupt. Both of them are carrying money. Or maybe if I vote for one particular party, I like this party over another party, because at least when they carry away money, we get some too. These are the sort of things that you continue to hear more and more in Barbadian society and Barbadians speaking about our elected officials or what have you.
All right, before you go on, I'd like Dr. Davinish, he's a behavioral scientist, and I'd like him to respond to you on this one.
Yes. A caller, thank you for your contribution. I totally agree with you in by way of the role of culture and its link to corruption and so forth. And there are certain systemic practices that have become cultural and, of course, have crossed the line towards corruption, and you highlighted a number of them. One of the things I always advocate is education. Education is important. I mean, if I use the analogy in terms of diet, in terms of, you know, you will hear, I live with my grandmother, and she would you know, fill my plate with a whole set of food. And it's natural, you know, that for a Bajan man or Bajan woman to, you know, finish that dish. And it's cultural, but that doesn't stop it from being unhealthy. So there are cultural elements that we have to be mindful of. And I think education plays a great role here in terms of how do we educate a public or make a public aware of the actions. Cynthia made the reference of private citizens sometimes engage in certain things or practices that are corrupt, but they're not aware that these particular practices are corrupt because they're almost systemic. They're cultural. It's like normal.
But let me speak. I'm glad you introduced this aspect of education because I am also of the view that our education is the one with the biggest problems because we're educated to do in a lot of cases, our education is geared towards the success of the individual. So therefore, you're taught how to be how to make it on your own. Okay, in terms of well, you study, you work hard, or what have you, and you make a lot of money. It is about you, and the question as to how much you then are expected to assist others. In terms of getting their achieving their success, you are given the attitude of, if I can do it, you can do it too, as opposed to saying how can I help you, and then the education of how do you become a productive member of society, what is your obligation to society, and increasingly as pressures build up in terms of how you yourself have to get through and make it in a world and competing against others. That is the focus of what our educational system is about. It is less about teaching you the civic responsibilities that you have in society. So therefore, because you spoke about checks and balances within the public service, there are thousands of checks and balances in the systems already. We inherited one of the most rigorous sets of checks and balances in terms of the public services as designed by Britain, what have you. But we had individuals at that time who considered themselves honorable and who would go into those systems and perform in the capacities in which they believed they were expected to perform. What we have seen happening over the course of time is an erosion of that. And one of the things we have to understand as well, in terms of solutions now, we have to recognize something. And as I said it the other day, all roads lead to and through the Prime Minister at this point in time in our country. All power leads and everything flows downhill from there. If you have a person at the top who is not engaged or who you do not feel that you can then go to in order to say, well, listen, I see something wrong here and I want it, I believe we should fix it, and then see that that person then is going to address your concerns, then you have a problem. That is where everything right now in the way we have starts. So we have to have a change of a vision of a person at the top, so that then government can work in the way it's supposed to work. We have people going into elected office right now, and the Constitution says the reason why these elections are supposed to be happening are because the individuals coming in are supposed to be there to represent their particular constituencies. They're supposed to be the voice of the people, and it's supposed to work in the way that when the people say something, then that representative takes it to the House of Assembly, it is discussed there, and then in a cabinet, the Prime Minister and the fellow ministers then deal with the issues and then make sure that the funds and stuff are allocated to solve the problems within the constituencies. We have this perception in Barbados right now that unless you're a minister, none can get done in your constituency. Unless you have power, unless you have money, right? When you get in, you can't do anything for me. So therefore, independence or what have you, they can't do nothing for me because they ain't got the money. That is all wrong. That is wrong.
Yeah.
And we need to fix society in that respect. Right. And we need to then change that perception.
All right, caller. We want to get some reaction here.
Yeah, I was just making one statement, just to kind of add or close the lid on that you were mentioning. But, you know, there's this saying now, they say it's much less about what you know and about who you know.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's unfortunate.
Mm. Barbara Giles, you like to come in on this?
The caller actually said a mouthful, and I think there are some very critical points that he made. I am not sure if I quite agree, and I don't think he made a convincing argument for me. I don't know if I quite agree on his take on education. The fact that somebody should not the education system try to promote success of individuals, so I have a little difficulty with that. The other major thing I have a problem with is his identification of the fact that our political system has thousands of checks and balances. That is not true. And you know, even in the mother of parliaments, which is Britain, they have recognized that one of the major problems with their system is that there are inadequate checks and balances, which is why the British political system has been in a reform mode for the last 20 years or so. And they are putting in place certain things that the Caribbean is, in fact, very resistant to enacting or to implementing. Because they recognize it is important to curb the level of unaccountable government they have in Britain. So it's a little inconsistent. And then the third thing is that it's a little inconsistent to say that, you know, you have all of those checks and balances, yet at the same time, all roads lead to the prime minister. It's too inconsistent for me. Yes, I understand the prime minister is of tremendous importance in our political system. But certainly, I don't necessarily believe that all roads lead to the prime minister at all. And of course, I think the larger issue that is raised based on some of the wonderful, suggestions that's made here by the caller, is the fact that we really need to look carefully, in spite of the fact that he says that we have so many checks and balances, that we need to look carefully at our political model, because it does raise the specter of the representative as a constituency representative. But then at the same time, we have to deal with the fact that we are dealing with individuals who must indeed carry out full three roles in the society. So they want at the same time a constituency representative. But remember, they're also not just a constituency representative. They are national representative. And how do you deal with national issues versus constituency issues in our political model is something that we have to deal with. How do you treat the issue of being a legislator at the same time that you're a constituency representative? And how do you treat the issue of being a legislator, a constituency representative, when at the same time you're also a member of the executive branch of government? And so we have to really get to the point where we decide whether or not it is just asking too much of any individual to perform those four roles or those three roles in society. And part of it might lead, is not necessarily an issue of corruption, although it could lead to that, but part of it has to do with whether or not any individual that is asked to pursue all of those things, as well as take care of their personal business, can really be effective in those three or four roles which they must perform. That's taking us beyond the issue of corruption.
Certainly, you're throwing up a whole set of things. A whole set of things.
Well, those things are actually thrown up by the caller, which is why I'm saying that what he put on the table is quite interesting, but it is moving beyond the realm of corruption.
Yes, that is very true. Let me just read a WhatsApp here for you. And this brings into focus now the media. The media really needs to start to execute real investigative journalism. We will continue until the media really starts to execute real investigative journalism, we will continue to run around in circles, investigate the government, the private sector, the police, etc. Do your job and let's get to the bottom of this. And the caller is also feels very strongly that there is a need for a police certificate of character to ensure that those who are running for public office are people of integrity.
But how does a police certificate say whether or not somebody is a person of integrity? What do they define? What do we look at to make that determination and to put it down in a certificate? All the police certificate can say is whether or not you have committed a crime or such matter. They can't go beyond that.
Well, you see, the thing about it is that people see a police certificate of character as suggesting that you are a person who you've not been in any trouble with the law. That's the first thing. And the second thing is that you, since you were not in any, had any difficulty with the law, that therefore you are a person who can be trusted.
Really? There are so many politicians and other people out there who have never been in trouble with the law globally, yet they have been arrested and after the fact for corruption while in public office. But prior to entering public office, there was no indication that they were in fact corrupt. A police certificate can only go so far. And as I indicated this morning, when you look at the Constitution of Barbados specifically, it indicates who should and who ought not to be, selected as a candidate to contest an election, and therefore they should not be in parliament. Mm-hmm. But that is not to say because somebody went bankrupt that automatically the person will be corrupt. There, as I said before, there are billionaires across the world who are very corrupt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have to be careful about the kinds of I would say conclusions we arrive at on the basis of somebody having one unfortunate incident.
Very true. Let's go back to the phone lines. Good afternoon. You're on the air. It's 1:02 p.m. We close at 1:15. Go right ahead.
1:15.
So, I think that call just dropped out. Anyway, let's go back to the WhatsApp. Mr. Price and panel, why can't the Auditor General take his report to the DPP or the Commissioner of Police for further investigation? Either of you want to handle that one?
I can respond.
Respond.
Uh-huh. If you look at the enabling legislation, the Auditor General, his responsibility is to ensure that there is an audit of government departments and, when necessary, of course, statutory corporations. As the Auditor General in Barbados would have indicated from time to time, he's not in a position to undertake all of those things,
mm-hmm.
partly, of course, because he does not have the necessary staffing, which is critical for him to do the kind of work that is expected of him. But once that is done, all the Auditor General can really do is to take the report to Parliament, and then Parliament's supposed to act on that. Now, the link between the Auditor General, Parliament, and the police, etc., and is in fact the Public Accounts Committee. And we have seen recently how the Public Accounts Committee, as I indicated before, was in fact hampered in its capacity to undertake the work that it needed to do. So that report, although it has not been tabled in Parliament as far as I understand, the beauty of the society we're living in today is the fact that almost nothing is secret. So although the report has not yet been tabled in Parliament, I was able to discuss the report with my students, untabled report, I believe, with my students some weeks ago when the report began to hit the social media various platforms.
We go back to phone lines and we'll come back to discuss this. You're on the air. Good afternoon.
Yes. Hey, good afternoon. Let me just turn this thing off. It's very good that you're speaking about corruption and defining it basically as receiving funds more or less expecting a return of a favor. But the very nature of the political game in Barbados is based on that. I mean, you're not going to stop smaller people from getting involved with that kind of activity just by defending it as being corrupt. As soon as you start defining the whole concept of a party receiving money in lieu of a favor to be returned, as soon as you view that, or start viewing that as being corrupt, there's no point going after the rest, even declaring of assets. The entire basis is based on a bribe. That is why people get involved. That's why parties get involved, because there are bribes at hand. You have to accept that. I hear you speaking all day long about younger, smaller people, public servants, private sector, accepting bribes, but the very nature of the political game is based on a bribe.
Even a private sector
guy came on the program 2 weeks ago and says he is very much opposed to it, but he can't do nothing about it because his competition is doing it too. That is where the problem is. You fix that, and I can tell you the whole concept of corruption goes away.
All right, just hold tight. I expected you to call every sense. The thing about it is that what I want to hear you on, because in fact, the question I should ask you, Mr. Anti-America, is when the new act is proclaimed, if it is proclaimed as promised on June 15th, one of the sections in it, and Barr-Giles, Ms. Barr-Giles can clarify here. She made the point is that we would actually be looking at financing of, let me just check my notes, financing of political parties. That aspect will come up. So that's why I expected to hear you ever since, because this is an area that I know that you're extremely concerned about. Did you hear that conversation that was going on earlier on that aspect?
You're asking if I heard it?
Yes.
Yeah, but it's only in passing. I mean, Kadir, man. But you just can't pick up a phone and call you guys, you know. You're going to pick up and hope you get through. You see? But you didn't. If it was mentioned, and I may have heard it in passing, okay, it was not elaborated upon. Right. Nobody expanded on it.
Well, with all due respect, Sankar, for the whole, you know, we are accused by Mark of spending too much time on politicians and bribes and corruption. Uh-huh. And then now we are accused by this gentleman of not spending enough time on it.
That's so brass tacks, my dear.
I'm a little bit confused. That when we are just lambasted by Mark for doing the opposite.
No, don't get me wrong. Politicians do what politicians do. Private sector people do what private sector do. But the very nature of a party, which exists on the fact that there are bribes to be had, bribes to be given and bribes to receive, not buying votes, but in terms of accepting the contributions. Because if I am down the road and I'm saying, well, look, that party get a contribution, and that is what that is about, well, let me get something out of this process as well, too. If you could give me money, I will take it. It is all bribes all the way down. If you're not prepared to go after the people who receive bribes for a party, but then expect to go after the party for using that money to itself go and buy bribes.
The point is well made. But just listen, because the new legislation has been promised. It's already being legislated. This legislation is already there and it's been proclaimed. Ms. Barr-Giles was explaining it, so let her continue. Go ahead, Ms. Barr-Giles.
I don't know what else I could say in relation to that, except that you, as you quite rightly said, there are issues that we are concerned about. I think what you're indicating is that there's a lot of influence peddling taking place, and sometimes it results in some societies in the hijacking of decision-making. Now, what many of finance regimes attempt to do is to ensure that you can actually disclose where your money is coming from. But we have to go beyond that, because one of the things perhaps we didn't touch on this morning is the procurement system in Barbados and across the Caribbean. And people have made a direct link between that act of giving political parties money and also what comes out, or how your procurement system is operating. So the present Prime Minister of Trinidad and Tobago, for instance, when he was leader of the opposition, had made a very valid point that he would not want to consider any further reform of the finance system in Trinidad and Tobago without direct reference to how we manage the system of contract giving and granting across in that country. And right. I think every single Caribbean country needs to take that on board. One of the things that I would like to acknowledge is the fact that we have in places like Jamaica, and yes, which I know has a lot of corruption, but places in like Jamaica and Belize, which has put in place, for instance, a office of a contractor general that has gone some way in, attempting to control the level of bribery and influence peddling and other things that takes place in relation to the procurement system.
Yes. Okay, I hear you, ma'am. I hear you. Yeah. But even if you see it's happening in Belize and Jamaica, and that corruption still takes place, why are you prepared to follow that same route, recognizing, of course, that there are
problems? But I want to talk about one aspect. Perhaps they have removed some of the corruption from that angle, but other things have not yet been looked into, which is why I'm suggesting that we have to have a very holistic approach to understanding where and how corruption can take place. Let's look at all of the pillars of our national integrity
system.
Including where you started this afternoon. Sorry.
Let me make a suggestion, see if you agree with it or not. One, have the parties register with CAIPO, because they
have
do receive money.
Have the parties register with whom?
The AIPO, the
corporate
or
affairs.
The
corporate affairs. Corporate affairs, right.
And international intellectual property. Have them register with them as going concerns. So they have a TIN, that's a tax identification number, and then you have now to declare your source of revenue and how you're spending it.
Have you read the Prevention of Corruption Act? Huh?
Ma'am, crying a lawyer?
No, but I'm not a lawyer. And I read it. I think everybody in Barbados needs to read the Prevention of Corruption Act. Because
so
all I'm suggesting
that particular
to you,
facility, ma'am?
All I'm it's online. All I'm suggesting
make my life easy, sweetheart. Sorry, ma'am.
No, all I'm suggesting
let me know
to you,
if that
it's okay. It's okay. I'm not one of them that will take exception to the use of the term sweetheart, because I call everybody sweetie. But I don't think it's sexual harassment. Not for me. But what I'm saying to you is that the prevention, what you're suggesting, is already included under the Prevention of Corruption Act. Political parties must register. Because part of the problem that we have in Barbados right now, which is why we cannot go after political parties, is because the existing legislation does not speak, nor does the Constitution speak about political parties. This act does. And that's why it is one of the reasons why we must proclaim it and we must enforce it and do it as quickly as possible.
Mm-hmm. And on that note, folks, now we're really warming up. We have to pack it up and put it away. I'd like to thank Cynthia Barrow-Giles and Dr. Dwayne Devenish.
Thank you.
For being here and giving us some insight as to corruption in Barbados and having that discussion. Yes, there's much more that can be said on this topic. There is much more to be said. And I think that all of us, based on what has been we've looked at today, what we've explored today, I think all of us need to take a step back and look and ask ourselves about our own actions, whether we work in government, whether we work in the private sector. We need to also look at the actions of those who are vying for political office as well, you know. But we need to take a serious look at our society and how we do business in Barbados in different ways. I'd like to thank each and every one of you, Cynthia Barrow-Giles, as well as Dr. Dwayne Downage. Thank you so much for agreeing to come on this program to discuss this hot topic. And I look forward to hearing you sometime this week on Brass Tacks. Have a great day.
It's the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing material.
For building supplies, big or small, at Brilliant Metals we have it all. At Brilliant Metals we have it all.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.